Hello, everybody, and welcome to Soul Speak. Sheldon Piznat, your host and producer of Soul Speak. Welcome. Thank you for being here. Season 3, How to Fully Embody Your Talented Gifts and Light Up the World. Tribute season to Dr. Wayne Dyer. And why don't I dive right into his quote for the interview? Now, let me tell you, this is the first quote I've paraphrased a little bit. I've just taken a little bit out to focus it more on a specific part of the quote. So if you've heard the quote before in its total, just know that I've summarized it a little bit. The more you see yourself as what you'd like to become, the more you'll activate those dormant forces within you and transform your vision into your reality. The more you see yourself as what you'd like to become, the more you'll activate those dormant forces within you and transform your vision into your reality. Wayne Dyer. So welcome again, Soul Speak. We have an intention. My intention here that I'm co-creating with all of you and with Spirit is that this is a place of support, fellowship, guidance, upliftment, awakening. We're all in this together. We're all part of this container that is this series, that is Soul Speak, this energy field. All, you know, your intention, your for yourself and for others is interwoven into this field. So please just go ahead and affirm along with me, with my intention, if you feel so called, that while you're here listening, or not even listening, while you're just a part of this in general, Soul Speak, in any way, shape, or form, that you are receiving a grace, a guidance, an upliftment, an awakening, your next steps, clarity, new levels of abundance and integration, and feeling that in a kinesthetic way. So, and add anything you want to into what your unique and highest vision is for yourself in your journey right now. So I'm really excited to introduce this guest. We just met a little while ago, and I'm very intrigued with his work. He's a great guy, and he's got a wonderful background and breadth of experience. So this is going to be a great interview. His name is Mordechai Mark David Nasik, and he's an internationally known teacher, healer, shaman, yogi, mystic, Reiki master, Sufi, and holistic health and business consultant. It's really a man with many hats. Well known for facilitating life-changing experiences, Mordechai David has been featured on television and radio, both nationally and internationally, while pursuing his global quest for health, vitality, longevity, and spiritual enlightenment. Mordechai David has studied with many masters of the world's traditions and religions. Most recently, he's been studying Kabbalah in the Holy Land's mystical city of, and I might pronounce this incorrectly, Safed, where Kabbalah has very deep roots. Hi, Mordechai. How are you? Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yeah, that was great, Sheldon. That was perfect.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's great to be here with you. I'm very excited for what you're doing with Soul Speak in the season 3, and I've been listening to the interviews. They're amazing, and I'm honored to be here with you today to share with everybody. Thank you.
Absolutely. Great to have your energy and your experiences and your wisdom here with us and all that you're bringing forward. And, you know, you got to tell me, you've been through a lot, you've studied a lot, you've got a lot of background. I'm curious to know more about you. What sparked your journey into the world of holistic health and wellness?
Well, the thing that started it, I was selling real estate when I was in my early 20s, and also I was a mortgage broker, and I was basically pretty stressed out, not eating good food, not sleeping enough, and I was getting these bloody noses. And they were awful. I had hay fever, and I was getting bloody noses. And one night, the bloody noses lasted for 4 hours. And
wow.
I then went to the hospital to find out what to do. And they said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to stick a hot piece of metal up your nose, like a wood burner, wood burning thing, and we're going to burn the blood vessel in your nose. That'll stop it from bleeding. I'm like, great. So if I have gangrene, you're just going to chop my arm off and we'll get rid of the gangrene. That's great. But how about, do you have any ideas about how we're going to heal the symptoms rather than just cut the chase at the problem? What, and the doctors didn't have an answer for me. So I said, okay, I'm leaving. You're not going to stick this burning piece of metal up my nose and burn the blood vessel. I'm going to find a way to heal the symptoms, because that way of thinking just didn't make any sense to me. Long story short, one of my mom's friends, Charlotte Travis, was into holistic health and wellness. And my mom called her up. She said, oh, Mordechai just needs to eat and drink a lot of vitamin K. Vitamin K is in green leafy vegetables. Vitamin K will clot the blood. When there's enough vitamin K in the body, the bloody noses will not happen anymore. And that's exactly what happened. I changed my diet. I went through a holistic doctor. I did all this stuff with my diet and my lifestyle, made these changes, and the bloody noses went away. The hay fever went away. And that was basically the event of my life that sparked me going on to a spiritual journey, starting with the physical body and then leading into meditation and yoga and more other spiritual practices.
Wow. You almost had scurvy or something. You were vitamin starved, it sounds like. Good thing you didn't submit, you know. Good for you for not submitting to a hot cauterization up your nose. That would have never, you know, would have lasted who knows how long, and then everything could have started again and worse.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, I sure would love to hear more about your journeys and your travels studying shamanism and mysticism and Sufism.
Okay.
Well, and I know we have a limited amount of time, so I want to serve the audience more than my own curiosity. But maybe, you know what? What the heck? Why don't you share just a little bit about that?
Okay. Well, I was into yoga and meditation, and I practiced yoga on my own for about 10 years. Every morning I would practice yoga for about an hour every morning. And over a 10-year period, I didn't miss more than 3 days in a row. So it was a huge discipline. Even if I was traveling, I would do it in the airport. If I wanted to learn a new class, take a class or something, I would do it in the afternoon, because in the morning when I first woke up and did my yoga practice, it was a practice that centered me, grounded me, and connected me, and opened my physical body, and I felt strong, I felt alive and awake, and it just set the whole day.
Yeah.
And it's been an amazing practice and keeping me healthy, and that led into a meditation practice, which led me to study with a guru from the yoga tradition, someone named Amrit Desai, who was the inspiration for Kripalu Yoga Center in Lenox, Massachusetts. And I also studied Qigong with a man named John Milton, who was a bodyguard for the Dalai Lama. And I studied Qigong in Arizona in the Chiricahua Mountains with him, and that was spectacular. And I studied Sufism with two Sufi masters, one who lived in the Middle East. His name is Sidi. And unfortunately, he passed away about a month ago. And his understudy, Dr. Ibrahim Jaffe, who is part of a school. He inspired a school called the University of Spiritual Healing and Sufism. Mm. So I studied with both of them, and And as far as shamanism goes, I have a research paper on my website about shamanism by this professor who said shamanism is about using the breath to connect to your body on this plane and to connect into other realms of existence, but you're doing them simultaneously. And the word shaman comes from Siberia. That's where the word shamanism comes from. Most people think it's from Native American spirituality, but it's actually from Siberia. And basically every indigenous peoples on the planet have medicine men, shamans, spiritual leaders that play the role of the leader of their community, the healer of their community, and all the way from South Africa to Australia. I mean, Native Americans, all the indigenous peoples of the planet have this modality, for lack of a better word. So tapping into things beyond the logical, empirical mind, into storytelling, into energy, into connecting into energies that we might not see. For example, when you cross the street in San Francisco, you're getting bombarded by cell phone waves, digital waves, gamma rays, X-rays, radio waves, television waves, all these different energy forms. It's no wonder that you don't fall over crossing the street getting hit by all this stuff. Right?
Right. Yeah, sometimes I do fall over when I'm doing my character in front of the computer and then the TV later. My eyes start burning, and they're red, and so I do know how that goes. But yeah, that is interesting.
They're even selling devices to put on your body and in your homes to protect you from these electromagnetic fields and the radiation from cell phones and blah, blah, blah. So the more one tunes their body to subtle energy, the more one can actually feel these energies that most people on some level don't actually see or feel. Because we can see all the colors of the rainbow, red, orange, yellow, blue, green, violet. But on top of violet is another color, ultraviolet, but we can't see it. But we know it exists because we wear sunglasses to protect ourselves from it. And below red, there's another color, infrared. We can't see that either. But because we own a Sony camcorder with infrared technology, we see that infrared actually is a spectrum of light that is visible, not to our eyes, but with the Sony camcorder, we can see it visible to our eyes. So just because we can't see it or hear it or feel it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And as I said earlier, as one fine-tunes their body, they're able to perceive some of these things that other people cannot. And this is the realm of mysticism and shamanism, to be able to help and guide people from this place of knowing that's beyond the realm of mind.
And forgive me, audience, for asking this kind of question, but why is that important?
Why is that important?
Yeah, to be able to differentiate and feel subtler energies and connect.
Why is that important? That's a great question. I guess the importance of that is to really feel connected to the divine. Because if we talk about God or the divine or the I Am presence or the creator or God, that's a very ephemeral notion.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say all of this is an attempt to feel that connection. Because it's like, what holds all the atoms and the telephone that you're holding together? How come all these molecules don't just fly out like astronauts in space? What holds the molecules together and keeps your bureau on your floor and your bed on your floor and your house together, and not everything flying off? It's an energy that's love, that's like the glue stick for all the molecules in the universe. There's something that has an innate wisdom, an intelligence that keeps order in the universe. And that, go ahead.
So, no, I love the subject. I love, we talk the same language, my friend. So eating healthy, healthier, watching, being mindful of what we eat, being mindful of perhaps how we spend our time, yoga, different meditation, so on and so forth. Are you saying that those can facilitate us to be more in tune with the subtle energy, become more sensitive to it?
Most definitely. And the reason is when we eat food that is less pasteurized, less chemicalized, more natural, like food was 50, 60 years ago, before all the chemicals basically rendered the ecosystem in the earth, all the microorganisms in the earth, it killed everything. So then you plant the seeds, and then the seeds don't have the nutrients and the minerals and the vitamins in it like they used to, because it's growing in basically dead soil.
Mm-hmm.
So when you eat organics and they're not getting poisons in the earth or on the plants, you're eating produce that was grown in a very rich, healthy, bacteria-friendly, vitamin-friendly, mineral-rich soil that goes into the food that when you eat it, it goes into you. And just like if you just imagine everything in the form of energy, amounts of energy, if you wake up and don't have a lot of energy, you're not going to be going for a run. And if you have a lot of energy, you can go for a run. You can create things. Everybody's wanting energy. And so when we eat foods and do activities that are rich in energy and give us energy rather than depleting energy, we have more of it. And the bottom line is everybody's looking for more energy.
But isn't that what coffee is for?
Ah, coffee is a short-term fix.
It is, I know.
But coffee also has benefits for the mind. It has chemicals in the coffee that are actually good for the mind. Just if one's drinking coffee, it's important to hydrate even more, to stay hydrated, because coffee is more acidic and can make you a little bit dehydrated. So because our bodies have so much water, and water is the biggest conductor of electricity, like copper or metal. So when we're hydrated, we're actually more open to electromagnetic energy and life force itself, which is electromagnetic.
Mm. So, yes, we all want energy. I was being, just joking around. We all want more energy. I just want to bring us back to that, because what you were talking about is just fantastic. We all want more energy, absolutely. And we all know what it's like to wake up and just not feel like we've had that much energy. And it could have something to do with what we ate the night before, what we've been eating, how we've been spending our time. And I certainly know for myself that yoga, deep breathing, and qigong, are things for me that definitely enhance my energy. Can you continue along that vein that you were speaking of before I cracked a joke?
Sure. What I'll share is when I was in India with this Kundalini yoga master, Amrit Desai. I was his chef for a couple months in India.
I interviewed him last season on SoulSpeak.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Amazing. I didn't know that. Wow, great. So I was his chef in like 1994 in India, and he's a Kundalini yoga master, and Kundalini basically is another word for life force, an awakened life force. So he had the ability to awaken someone's kundalini. So mm-hmm. since I was like seeing him every day, I'm like, I'd like my kundalini awakened. And what he said to me, he says, you know, he pointed at the electrical outlets in the wall, and he said, there's wires going from each outlet. And those wires can have so much electricity going through them. In America, we can have 110 volts go through these wires. In Europe mm-hmm. and in the Middle East, 220 volts. If more voltage goes through these wires, the wires get very hot. If they get hot enough, they're going to melt the rubber plastic around the wiring, and it could start a fire. And what he says is if someone receives kundalini awakening and they're not ready, it's like all the wiring in their body catching on fire mm. and burning down the house. And the wiring is synonymous to the body's nervous system. The nervous system in the human body is carrying electric energy signals. When we want to move our hand, the brain sends an electronic impulse through the nerves to the hand, through the brain, and we have movement. If you go to the hospital to an EKG, you're going to see the electricity in your body on these devices that they hook you up to. So basically, energy is real. Just like Einstein proved, E equals MC squared. If we take an ice cube and we put it on the sidewalk in Arizona in the summertime at 112 degrees, in about 3 minutes, it's going to be a puddle of water. And in another 5 minutes, it's going to be a gas. It's going to be steam. It's going to evaporate. But that ice cube still exists in the puddle and then in the form of the gas. So that mm-hmm. still exists now, it just changes form. And that's what energy does. Energy is eternal, but it changes form. And some of the forms you might be able to see, hear, touch, feel, taste, and some of them not. Just like a dog whistle. You blow the dog whistle, your kids don't hear it, but every time you blow the dog whistle, Spot comes running. Why is that? Because the dog has the technology to hear that frequency, whereas humans don't.
So let's talk about that then. Let's talk about energy and the different forms of energy and how this all relates back to what you were sharing about 10 minutes ago about coming down to a connection to the divine, to God, to source, to love.
Okay.
So, did I throw a big segue in there?
Love is electric. Between two people, there's chemistry. And this is this energy that most people can feel. There's some energy bringing people together. There's, like they're talking about in the law of attraction, how does this work? It's like two magnets, North Pole to South Pole, they attract. South Pole to South Pole, they repel. You hold the two magnets next to each other and you can feel them push or pull, even though the magnets aren't touching. So there's a perfect example that everyone has had where you can feel something happen, but you cannot see it. Now, if you take the magnet and throw it on the floor, the magnet will stop when it hits the floor, but the electromagnetic field will not stop. It will go through the floor and leave the magnet. And if you then pick that magnet up and stick it on your refrigerator, it won't stick to your refrigerator because the electromagnetic field is no longer in it. It went through the floor and back into the earth.
Is that true?
Yes.
I didn't know that. Really? If you throw a magnet on the floor, the electromagnetic field will leave the magnet from that stop?
Yep.
Huh.
If you throw it hard enough, and depends on the uh-huh. size and you want if you in the surface of the floor, like if you go to a junkyard, there's these cranes that have a big electric magnet,
right?
That the magnet goes down, it picks up a car, and they mm-hmm. move the car. And to let the car drop, what they do is they kill the electricity going to the magnet. That lets the electromagnetic field stop, and in that moment, the car is not magnified to the magnet, and the car falls. It's the same thing.
Mm.
So why is this important and how is this connected to the divine, to God, the creator? Because the just imagine God or the divine or the creator is the biggest power plant in Los Angeles that's powering all of Los Angeles. And if you go and touch the wires coming out of that power plant, it would kill you. Mm-hmm. It's so much juice coming out of there. But if you're living in Simi Valley, miles away from that electric power plant, and you're in a house, and you accidentally, God forbid, stick your finger in the socket and get electrocuted, you're not going to die. Because between the house and the electric power plant are many step-down stations and transformers that step down the electricity. So it doesn't burn the wires in your house or you. So the divine also steps down the electricity to us humans on the planet. Because if we were actually to touch, have a revelation of that energy, it's so strong, it could also kill us. So it comes to us in dreams. It comes to us with people that have out-of-body experiences or near-death experiences. Some people can hear celestial sounds. Some people just know things from a place beyond knowing things from the mind because they meditate and they're eating good food and they're doing spiritual practices. So you can hear things, know things. Yeah, go ahead.
Mordecai, what about peak experiences, spiritual awakenings? I'll take an experience I had. I'll share with you really quickly. I had a very cathartic spiritual awakening. I purged, like I spent 6 hours on the floor in a fetal position, crying and just sobbing and you know letting go of all this pain. And mm-hmm. and when I stepped out onto the beach that night, after that, finally got my butt up, and I had so much love coursing through my body kinesthetically on my skin. I just felt like a violin string that had been plucked, and it was so powerful yet equally tender, so infinitely tender and loving. And, you know, I spent something like 5 weeks there before it dropped off and stabilized. What about that kind of experience? You know, I wasn't, to me, it felt just incredibly tender and powerful. I didn't, you know, do you have any experience with that kind of, how does that fit into what you're talking about?
Yeah, I was in San Diego, and I first learned about live raw food, and I was just eating sprouted food, wheatgrass, nothing cooked, and uh-huh. then I was driving home. I was on the highway, I forget what highway it was, but I'm driving down the road, and all of a sudden I feel this tingling sensation in my hands and my feet, and my fingers are like won't move, and I'm driving down the highway.
I'm
having
great.
This experience like this is pretty sensational for sure.
Uh-huh.
It feels kind of good, but what's happening? Am I dying? What's going on? I think I better pull over. So I pull over, and then eventually it subsided, and basically it was like a niacin rush. Because I was eating a lot of buckwheat grains and things that have niacin in
uh-huh.
them.
Sure,
and a niacin flush, if anyone's had that, it's like a wave of energy or heat or tingling
uh-huh.
sensation in your body. So
right.
what it's doing is it's waking up the energy in the body, the nerves, any place there was pain, that pain got released, now energy can flow through that. Let's take an example. Let's say in the backyard of your house, you have a water spigot connected to your house, and you have a watering hose. You turn it on, nothing's coming out of the end of the hose. You look at the hose, mm-hmm. you inspect the hose, and you see there's a knot in the hose. Well, no wonder why it's not coming out. It's blocked. And if you turn the pressure up, eventually that hose in that place right before the knot would begin to expand and potentially could even explode if there's enough pressure. So now let's take the human body. Let's say there's thousands of those hoses in your body. In Chinese medicine, they call them meridians. If you go to a Chinese medicine office, doctor's office, there's a little Chinese doll with black lines and then points on those black lines. those lines are called meridians. And what the Chinese acupuncturists are doing is when they can see, feel, know where there's a block in that meridian, like the block in the hose, and they go and untie the knot. And once the knot is untied, the energy flows. So you can also look at your body like a highway system. Like in Los Angeles, there's the 405 highway and all these highways that intersect. And if there's a traffic jam at 8 o'clock in the morning in L.A., it affects all these other highways. So if you have some block in your heart or your knee or your lung or and your mind or in your emotional body, it affects all these other systems in the body. And once you release something that's blocked, an energy knot, a tight muscle, a toxic thought, a yucky emotion, you're unraveling your energy highway, your meridian system, and then energy flows, and then we feel things like you and I felt like. We have release, we cry, we feel tingling, we might feel shaking, we might feel... we might think we're going crazy when this stuff is happening. We might feel heat. We might feel shivering. All kinds of different body experiences when the body is going through one of these very deep cathartic healing experiences like you experienced. I mean, that's fantastic that you had that experience. That's huge. That's such a gift.
Yes, congratulations. Absolutely. Thank you. Absolutely was. Well, I've had to spend 10 years or so dealing, you know, on the previous part of that, which wasn't so wonderful. So I earned that right. gift in a way. How does that relate? My question is, how does that relate to the what you spoke of that, you know, if we plug right in to, you know, that we're going to get fried, so to speak. And I'm paraphrasing here. But I did feel like I was really... I mean, I felt like I was plugged right into that power plant of divine. And I didn't feel like there was any fry. I just felt infinitely loved.
Well, then you were ready.
Ah.
You were ready. We're not going to have these. So what this Kundalini yoga master said to me, he said, if you want me to wake up your energy, we can do that. But if you're not ready, what could happen is your energy wiring, nervous system, could fry because it couldn't handle the energy, and it can actually affect your mind, and you could wind up in a wacko house because if you're not ready for the experience, it can be damaging. Mm-hmm. And his last words were, if you're ready for this experience, it's going to happen on its own. And I said, okay, great, thank you. You keep your Kundalini energy. I'll try to be patient.
Do you think that's what happens sometimes? I was in Australia last year and I met somebody who was I picked up a hitchhiker, actually. It's you know, a safe place to do that in the area of Australia I was in, and gave him a ride to the beach, and he was sharing a story, young guy, and he was sharing a story about he was visiting his friend who took LSD for the first time, or mushrooms, I forget, and that he just was never the same since then. It had been about 4 weeks, and he was in the hospitalized and having that experience of, you know, kind of gone crazy, didn't come back. And yeah. I know that can open us up, those experiences, those psychotropic drugs can certainly open us up in the same way. And I'm just wondering if you think it could be correlated.
Yeah, it can definitely be to what?
Well, to the same kind of, you know, too much Kundalini too soon, too much energy too soon, and awakening before, you know, we're naturally ready.
Yeah, that's for sure true. I've seen a lot of people have drug experiences and not be able to integrate them.
Mm.
I mean, I've also seen people have Kundalini experiences and not be able to integrate those as well. Mm-hmm. And because of fear. Because
what does that look like? So
well,
just too much fear?
I was too much fear, or someone's not willing to go into the pain to totally release it.
Mm.
Because the only way through traumas and pains and things that we're trying to heal is to go through them. You're not going to take a pill or have an experience and have them just disappear. Because these things get locked in the body, in the cellular memory, in that's past mind, past subconscious mind, that's in the tissue, in the cells of the body.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, we want to go and heal and access it from that place. So if we're having a drug experience or even a Kundalini experience and you're not allowing yourself to go deep into the experience because of fear or pain or the memory that's coming up of the pain that you experienced in the past, it's going to stop the experience. Just like in meditation, if you have a thought, it's going to pull you out of meditation. If you have an emotion, it's going to pull you out of a meditation. If you can let go of the thought and let go of the emotion and come back to your breath, you're back in the meditation. So it's just about what you're focusing and where do you keep your awareness. So mm-hmm. even doing spiritual work with someone, let's say we're doing some deep spiritual work with someone that experienced trauma, if someone doesn't have the tools to go into and deal with the things that are going to come out once we open Pandora's box, it's not going to be fun or pretty, and you can actually do damage. So you have to make sure that when you embark on a healing journey like that, that you have the tools and that you're working with someone that can help guide you through the journey and make the journey, the speed of the journey resonant to where you are at. And whether you go fast or slow is not a judgment call of you or your character. It's simply a reality of who and where you are in dealing with the situation. It's like someone who wants to go on a diet. They're on a fad diet. They buy this thing or they buy a gym membership. I'm going to work out every day. I'm going to do this diet. And that energy there is in the moment. But when it comes to 30 days later, they're back at Burger King and McDonald's eating French fries. So it's not a long-lived intention. So these kind of journeys are going to call upon oneself to go deep and have patience and go into things that might very much be uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in my experience too, sometimes it's actually the fear of the pain that's actually more painful than actually going through it and re-experiencing it and being in it again.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
And has it been your experience that we play a co-creative role in the pace of our own healing journeys and our awakening journeys? We can,
for sure.
You know, yeah.
We can do things to collect a tool bag of tools for communication, for dealing with our emotions, for dealing with our thoughts, for dealing with our bodies, doing practices that open up our bodies, open up our mind, open up our emotions, so we can be less reactive and stay in an experience that otherwise might have us run.
Mm-hmm.
When we can just, I'll give you this Qigong master I studied with, John Milton, he taught me something very important. His master, his teacher, when he was in India, asked him to sit and meditate upon a funeral pyre. In India, they burn the bodies on a pile of wood by the Ganges. So his teacher asked him to sit and meditate at one of these burial burnings. So imagine sitting in front of a fire where a dead body is burning and it doesn't smell good, it doesn't look good, there's dark smoke. It's not a place you want to hang out. but it taught him how to be with the things in his own life, in his own toxic thinking, his own, or an example of our own things that are dying and decaying and don't serve us, and yet we don't let go of them. How can we be with those things to see them for what they are?
Mm.
And if they're toxic, to let them go and find a new way. Because usually the things that, the behaviors and things that we have that are hurtful and don't serve us anymore, were created as a tool for us to survive some type of an experience that was very hurtful.
Mm-hmm. That's a great analogy, and I love the way you language that.
Thank you.
So what are some of your go-to practices in working with your own process?
For me, meditation is my number one practice. Meditate for me as soon as I wake up, and in the same place at the same time. And
what type of meditation? What, can you be a bit more specific?
Sure. So meditation where you're just sitting still, sitting cross-legged with your spine straight, so you're not falling asleep lying down. Although when I teach meditation to beginners sometimes, I do have them lie down so they can totally let go of their body if they're not used to sitting straight with a strong, tall back, just to help the mind, the body not be fighting with itself. So when your body's more open, and you can sit cross-legged and sit with a strong, straight spine, to do that with your eyes closed, just focusing on your breath. There's lots of ways to go there. You can say a mantra. You can focus on a candle flame. You can just focus on your breath. You're breathing in and breathing out. Breathing in and breathing out, and just watching your breath. So there's a number of ways to meditate. But really, meditation happens at some point. You stop watching your breath. At some point, you stop saying the mantra. At some point, you stop looking at the flame. Because at some point, those things keep you out of meditation. So those things are just a vehicle to get you into the state where you're beyond the breath, beyond the candle, beyond the mantra, and you're just in this state. And those techniques are to get you to this state.
Would you say that that state is a state of pure experience, beyond the mind energy? What is that state?
That state is being a witness. It's like you're sitting on the phone having this conversation with me, and some part of you is standing behind you, above you, watching you on the phone having this conversation with me. And you might be saying, oh, well, maybe this interview should end. Oh, maybe I'm inspired and I should ask him this question. Oh, maybe I'm getting a little uncomfortable in this chair. Maybe the sun's out and you're thinking, oh, I can't wait to go outside. Whatever's going on, you're just witnessing your mind, your body's experience. And at some point, you're okay with your body being hungry, with it being tired, with it being energized, with it being happy, with it being sad. These different emotions or thoughts or things that you're witnessing don't take you out of the meditation. It's like you're just sitting and watching a movie. Sometimes you're laughing. Sometimes you're crying. Sometimes it's sexual energy. Sometimes it's sleepy. Sometimes it's a car chase. Sometimes it's nice and chill on the beach. All these different things can happen in the matter of 20 minutes, and you experience it vicariously in the movie theater. So when you sit and meditate, and you close your eyes, it's like you're looking at a movie screen. And as the movie slows down, the projector behind the screen, that they projected at the back of the theater, this beam of light is coming and being thrown on the screen. If they slow down that movie projector, what you'll see on the screen is a bunch of photographs moving slowly in slow motion. And if you slow the movie down even more, you're going to see a black empty space between each image. And this black space between the photographs on the film makes the whole movie possible. Without that black empty space, you would not experience the movie, the illusion of watching a movie. So if you imagine going into that black space between the images in the film, that's meditation. There's nothing, but yet it's everything. It makes the whole movie possible. If you are listening to my words, between each word, there's no word. There's nothing. But because there's nothing, that makes it possible to understand my sentence rather than me talking like this and you can't understand where the word is and what the sentence is and you can't understand anything. So that empty space is meditation. The place between your inhale and your exhale, there's no breath. That's meditation. So meditation is inviting us into the place between the breaths, the space, the black space between the images, and the silence between the words.
I love it. And just to let you know, I did understand you.
I can't talk that fast.
So you gotta pick it up. You're slacking, pal.
Too much meditation.
So we've as covered my wife a lot of ground.
Says, yeah, yeah. I was saying, as my wife calls me a turtle, I'm too slow. She's the rabbit, I'm the turtle.
Uh-huh. Well, opposites attract, I guess. You guys compliment each other well.
Thank you.
What is Kabbalistic healing? We haven't approached that part of your background.
Okay. So every tradition has a mystical path. Some people would say yoga is the mystical path of Hinduism, even though it's really not, but most people in the world think it is. Sufism is the mystical path of Islam or Muslim, and Kabbalah is the mystical path of Judaism. And what all of these have in common, and they're all also connected to shamanism, because it's all connected to meditation, in entering into the places that I just spoke of, between the images of the film, between the inhale and the exhale, when we kind of check out and check into something else. And for those who this is very familiar with, you get it. For those of you who this is new for, I'm offering a free gift at the end that will tell you about that. I can actually take you through an experience and you can experience it for yourself. So, but basically, what Kabbalah means is to receive. So in meditation, we're receiving. What are we receiving? We're receiving like a download of spiritual energy. We're receiving electricity from the electric power plant, but stepped down, like in Simi Valley, into that house in a way that's not going to kill us, that actually lifts us, fuels us, feeds us physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, and we have more energy. So it's about tapping into a space within where we can receive. We're receiving cosmic, divine, godly energy into our physical, mental, emotional, spiritual bodies.
Which is nice.
Which is nice. If anyone doesn't know, just come and hang out with us and you can ride the wave. Because, listen, some of you out there, you go hang out with your friend and you come back to your house and you feel like, man, I feel like I was just with a vampire and got all this life force sucked out of me. I feel dead. You know, you can walk into a house and feel like, whoa, people have been fighting here. You can feel the tension. You can cut it with a knife. But you can also walk into a place where there's prayer and meditation and love and joy and happiness and a happy family, and you can feel that too, and there's no words for it. So it's about accessing and being around people that lift you rather than drain you. And to the people that you feel like you're draining, you have to know how much time and space you can spend with them. I mean, there's some people that are so toxic that they need to live on the other side of the planet, and you can talk to them once a year. Any more than that is not good for you. And there's other people that you could live with and be with 24/7, and it's wonderful. So what we have to do is discern how much time and space we have to place between ourselves and another so we can keep our heart open. Because if we're with someone that we don't feel safe with, we don't feel comfortable with, most people tend to close their hearts in that place. And when you close your heart, you're actually hurting yourself. It looks like it's protecting us, but really it's hurting us. What we really need to do is keep our heart open and back up a little to have time and space between these kinds of experiences so we can keep our heart open to ourselves and give the love to the people who might feel like they're being a drain. We can actually give it to them, give them the love in a very healthy, supportive way, but in a way that doesn't make us go off kilter.
Yeah. Yeah, I know some schools of thought might say, you know, it's be that eye of the hurricane. In, you know, be that yogi master in the hurricane, stay centered. And then there's, you know, some other strategies out there and thought leaders that might say, you know what, it's absolutely not good for you to spend too much time in that hurricane. You know, you've got to have some space to recenter. And, yeah. So, why don't we
speak time and place for both of those, mm-hmm. like the middle path of both of those in discerning, for sure. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Saying why don't we do what?
That's okay. I was just going to segue into that gift that you spoke of,
and
what's happening for you now. How can what do you want to share with our audience about what's going on with you and your work, and yeah.
Great. So for everyone out there, I'm offering something called the Spring Cleaning Healing Meditation Experience. It's about a half hour, 40-minute experience that I suggest you do when you're at home, when you can be alone without distraction, and that you can lie down and cover your eyes with something and have this experience and not have to do anything after, so you can just be with the experience. In this experience, I give a little background about myself, and then I tell a story of a healing of someone who went to many medical doctors for a pain that they were experiencing, and the doctors said, nothing's wrong, I can't help you. And they came to me, and after two sessions with me, the pain was gone. And I share with everybody how that actually happened. And then I take you through an example of an experience so you can experience it for yourself and your heart and your body. So that's the complimentary gift I'm offering everybody, to actually have a personal experience with this work. And if you have questions about it before, feel free to let me know. My email and contact information is on the page where the complimentary gift is. And if you have questions or anything, feel free to write to me afterwards about your experience. If you just want to share, or if you have questions, I'd be honored to share space and be with you. As far as my work, what do? I work with people globally. Over the phone, talking to them and then taking people into altered states of consciousness, past mind, past subconscious mind, where we can actually access the cellular memory and have things shift and move from that place and have healing happen. I work with people over the phone. I work with people in person. I do events. I do internet experiences like this. And I work with nutrition. I work with meditation. I work with fasting. I work with yoga and Qigong and Kabbalah and Sufism and shamanism. And I've basically been trained to work with people in many different traditions, religions. So whatever someone's lingo, language for the spiritual world, I can usually accommodate. And to keep it really simple, my goal in these experiences is to provide a space where someone can experience each person can experience the divine, God, their higher self, the creator, whatever you want to call this, you know what I mean? How you can experience it in your body, have a direct experience of that energy in your body that heals. I'm not the healer. The divine is the healer. I'm only holding a space for that energy to come in while we keep your mind and subconscious mind over here on the side as a witness to the divine coming in. Because let's face it, if you have a cup of dirty water, there's no space to put champagne. You got to get rid of the dirty water to fill the cup with champagne. So healing is like this. We got to empty the cup of the muck, of what's not healthy, what's not supporting us, what's limiting us, what's keeping us stuck. We got to let go of that and stay open and have faith, courage, trust that champagne is going to fill the cup once we're empty. So there's going to be some moments that there's no muck and there's no champagne. And in that moment, we just got to sit and breathe and stay open and be the vessel to allow this light to come in. So it's all about shattering old vessels because they're weak and creating new vessels that are strong to contain the light, the electromagnetic force, the energy, the life force, the chi, the prana, the ki, whatever you want to call it. And when our physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual bodies are strong and solid, we can move mountains. We can join forces with other people and create beautiful change and inspiration. And we can just be the light. And why would someone want to be the light? It's like the sun. Every morning, gazillions of flowers all over the planet pay homage to the sun for life force. But you can't take anything from the sun. You can only receive what the sun gives. And it's the same with the divine. The divine just shines its grace and we can receive. But we can't say, hey, divine, I want it now. It doesn't work that way. At nighttime, you can't plead with the sun to come back. It just doesn't work. It's going to come back in its own time. So we have to do our work and be patient and basically put ourselves in the place where we know the sun is going to shine. So we can receive the light, we can be the light, and then we can give the light. And once we have the light, not to hold on to it either, but to let that go, just like we let go of the muck in the cup. We got to let go of the light. We got to share the light. We can't hold on to it and consume it and take possession because it'll die then. We have to stay open to allow the energy to flow through us. We have to be like a spring and just stay open and be the vessel that witnesses the water, the life force, moving through us. And then people see you like that and they'll say, hey, I want what they're having. What are you doing? Talk to me. Help me. I want what you have. And then you'll be doing the same thing, teaching the same concepts, because in that moment, you've embodied the essential practice that all the mystics, all the masters, all the saints, all the enlightened ones know. Sheldon?
I'm here. I was just soaking that up. What a very well said. I want to make sure you're complete.
Just checking. Oh, no, an internet fail.
And I wanted to share with you, I love that dirty water champagne analogy. I'm going to have to use that. Do I have permission? Is that trademarked? That's a great analogy. I haven't heard that before.
No. I didn't either. It just showed up. I'm sitting here staring at my cup of water, and it just, I think you know, when you get into this place and you're just being open, it's like a stream of consciousness writing. This is stream of consciousness speaking.
Mm-hmm. You're modeling just what you were talking about.
Oh, thank God. It's not always like this, believe me. You should have seen me a couple hours ago. The dance of the clean water and the champagne always.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, my friend. It's been a pleasure, a real pleasure. Thank you very much being here.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
So much fun and
enlightened. Mm-hmm. Thank you for all the amazing work you're doing, getting what you're getting out to all these people and being a vessel for all of us to do this together. And I'm so grateful for what you're doing, and it's great to know you more. And may this be the beginning of more and more magic and beautiful experiences.
Absolutely. And ditto right back at you, and to all of you out there listening as well. Same thing. And let's just continue to ride this together and support each other.
Yes. Make it a blessed, beautiful, fulfilling new year with abundance and health and wealth of all kinds, and joy, happiness, and peace in everybody's hearts. That's my blessing for us all.
All right. Everybody just say yes to that. Yes.
Yes.
I'm with you.
All right. Thank you, Sheldon.
Thank you, Mordechai. Thank you, everybody.
Okay. Many blessings.
Many blessings.